Blog Talk Radio.
I can't face it.
There is a sixth dimension beyond that which is known to men. It is a dimension as immense as the sky and as perpetual as eternity. It is the middle ground between illumination and darkness, between knowledge and ignorance. It lies between the depths of man's horror and the apex of his learning. This is a dimension of fantasy. It is an area which we call the Eerie Zone.
Welcome to Eerie House Radio. Got to face some more radio tonight. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with
a guy who has a face for radio, Dave Binkley from Weird in This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here along with,
this is CW on the road, traveling to Eerie House Radio. I'm ready to pick you up. All aboard.
Yeehaw. And I'm imagining in an old Thunderbird too, because my actual real life, a blood relative, a cousin of mine, posted a picture, and I believe it was a 56 Thunderbird, a black one, that had parked in his neighborhood, and it was like such a cool car. He had to post a couple pictures. Well, if I'm not mistaken, it's the exact car that Elvira had in her movie. You know, and they had it all monstered up with spider webs and stuff. Count's Customs. You know, Danny, who, by the way, was a horror host in Las Vegas. Anyway, Danny restores cars on the History Channel, Count's Customs. And Cassandra Peterson came in with that car. She ended up purchasing it from the studio. And had him fix a few things on it and monster it back up a little bit more. So it was really cool. And I believe she still owns it.
I think so, too. I think she also had them do some detailing on some limited edition of Vesper scooters that she was offering on her website to celebrate some sort of anniversary.
Ooh. Vespa scooter. I wouldn't mind a Vespa.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not in the Thunderbird. I'm in something more nondescript, say, NSA sort of vehicle rolling down your neighborhood. There I am, waving at you right now. Hello.
Hey, could you use all fingers next time?
Oh, did I do that?
Yeah. Oopsie. Hogsbane and good old Bob in the chat. Thanks for joining us live. We're continuing our weekend with stories about faces with a little offering from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. It's a tale called House Without Mirrors.
Go ahead.
House Without Mirrors.
House Without Mirrors, yeah.
That's a hard place to get a good look at, you know, to look yourself in the face.
Yeah.
You know, House.
I actually do my best to only look in the mirror once a day. I have to look at myself in the mirror when I shave, because I would not like
to sneak up on
myself
to shave.
Yeah. So anyway, so I have to look in the mirror once a day. Beyond that, I avoid the mirrors because then I can just visualize in my mind that the rest of the day I look like George Clooney. So there you go.
Yeah. You do kind of, not Jim, mention it. But,
No,
I don't want to look in a mirror. I have to keep
but
my
in my mind.
But without House Without Mirrors means I always know that I look my best every day.
And nobody can tell you different.
That's right.
Nobody can tell you different. That's an important thing there.
Now, I kind of wish you were with us yesterday, CW. We were I had brought up a film. I don't know much about it. I haven't seen it in its entirety. I've seen good clips of it. But I believe it's a foreign film called Eyes Without a Face from the mid-60s, I want to say. Are you familiar with that film?
I'm more familiar with the Billy Idol song.
Oh, yeah. I recommend. It sounds like something you would like. I think. Let me see.
I shall have to put that in my repertoire. It sounds terribly familiar. Was it Italian with the people doing the?
It's actually it's French. Le yo sans visage. Eyes without a face.
Oh,
which
I
think Billy Idol's song may or may not have something to do with, but I believe in the movie, guy's a doctor, his daughter gets into a horrible accident and tries doing a face graft or something like that, and there's some pretty hideous scenes. It has a haunting score and a disturbing plot. It can be quite anguishing.
Ew.
Yeah. I can only say three things in French. French fries, French toast, and croissants. Those are the only three things I can say in French.
It's from 1960. There you go.
Eyes without a stare. We shall have to enter that in our repertoire.
I'm going to have to make myself watch it. There's copies around.
Oh, if it's foreign, I'm pretty sure it's going to be in public domain. It might be on Dave's favorite website, archives.org. Is that the one that you are a patron of, Dave?
As we both are.
Yeah.
It's a great resource. It's a great resource.
It is a great resource. Yep.
Yeah, I've been, you told me that I would not have a life if I went on there to go for the old copies of Galaxy Magazine and et cetera. And you were correct.
God. Yeah, you can get lost in there.
You can.
Good old Bob says, scientists have shown that people think they always look like they were at age 18, no matter how old they get. And then there was that mirror thing.
Yeah.
Who is that old guy?
That's not necessarily a great thing, because some people do look better than they did when they were a teenager. They are less
true,
frumpy, less acne,
less dorky.
Parts that didn't match then match a little bit more now.
Well, I remember noticing that, as you know, kids that did look kind of dorky, it would turn out to be extremely attractive later on in life.
So you say there's still hope for me? Is that what you're saying, Dale?
There's no hope for us, Dave. We're done. We'll do the horror host thing and the radio thing, and that's pretty much it. Oh, goodness.
No. There's always hope. Remember, the next step, holograms, where you can have your own avatar and be however you want to be.
Oh, great. Some people aren't waiting. They're gluing stuff on themselves and whatever.
Yeah.
They've been doing that for a long time. Only it's getting better now.
Yeah. Hey, all you need is John Carpenter, and you can be anything. Or not John Carpenter, excuse me. Rick Baker, excuse me. Yeah, all you need is Rick Baker, you can be anything.
Woo-hoo.
From anywhere in the galaxy.
In the galaxy.
In the galaxy. House Without Mirrors. Any actors of note in this one, Dave?
I think this one is mostly your regular cast, if there was such a thing as a regular cast. There were a lot of guys that did a lot of them, but there's no really big Broadway or movie names in this one. There have been a few even old radio names, Grace Matthews and did a lot of the Shadows, along with Brett Morrison. And Brett Morrison did several Shadows as well as several Mystery Theater as well, but I don't think they ever were in one together on the Mystery Theater. I'd have to check that out, but I don't believe they were. Our good friend from the sixth rock from the sun, or third rock from the sun, he is he's in many of these, and you get a lot of the actors that did a one-on from time to time, that actors that people would know of. Agnes Moorehead did too. She was a good friend of Hyman Brown's. She did the very first one. She was very ill at the time. She got one more in, and that was it for Agnes. See, I think she died shortly after her second appearance.
Yeah, and Agnes is going to be with us next weekend. We'll tell you more about that later.
Yeah.
But let's get going with the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. We'll start with part one of House Without Mirrors. It was show number.
Actually, it was show number 1029, and it comes to us from February 12th of 1979.
Mystery Theater presents... Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. One of the compensations, I'm told, of advanced age is becoming an eccentric. When one is young and on into middle age, eccentricities are regarded with suspicion. We are expected to conform, to be more or less like, or at least similar to others. But in old age, our eccentricities, our oddities and peculiarities are somehow transformed into traits that appear rather dear and delightful, and we can even be loved for them. It's something to look forward to. Not much, but something.
What are you doing there, my girl?
Why, reading the scriptures, sir.
Are you indeed? Let's have a look.
Please, sir.
Uh-huh. And thought as much. A mirror. A mirror concealed between the pages. Out. Out with you. Out of this house, you baggage.
Our mystery drama, House Without Mirrors, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Paul Hecht and Norman Rose. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Thursday's a night to remember on CBS Television. Three great shows back again, back to back. We're looking good, starting with The Waltons. The year is 1943 on Walton's Mountain. You'll want to share the heartwarming stories of love and sacrifice as World War II brings growth and change to America's favorite family. Next, the exotic beauty of Hawaii's tropical paradise is the setting for volcanic adventure and heart-stopping action with Jack Lord and an exciting new Hawaii 5-0 team. Then, Buddy Ebsen as Barnaby Jones teamed up for a new season of suspense and drama with Betty and JR. Barnaby Jones, the private eye who's easygoing on the outside while he fights to put the bad guys on the inside. Thursdays are a night to remember this fall on CBS Television.
In just 15 years, Polk Brothers has seen the microwave oven go from almost a novelty to a virtual necessity in Chicagoland homes. With moms so busy, instant cooking is a must. Our famous brand name microwave manufacturers, Amana, General Electric, Hotpoint, Litton, Magic Chef, Panasonic, Quasar, Caloric, Tap, and Whirlpool, have created countertop models, gas and electric combinations, with fantastic automatic controls which keep tabs on everything from the cooking to the time and date. And nowhere in the world but Polk Brothers can you see and compare side by side as many models of microwave ovens. Polk priced as low as $179, less a Polk trade-in. And with any microwave you buy at Polk Brothers, you get a rare gift, your free copy of Wally Phillips' new book, The Wally Phillips People Book. It's the $7.95 hardcover edition. A Polk Brothers gift to you with most major purchases. Only one to a family, though. Buy where the builders and apartment owners buy. Polk Brothers, nightly till 10, Sundays till 6.
Thank you.
have said before that eccentricity is tolerated, often affectionately, in the elderly. However, the story we bring you now does not concern an elderly person. It's about a man who, at the start of our drama, is about 35 years of age. But his eccentricity dates back to an earlier time, and it was not tolerated or regarded with affection.
If I could have afforded a house along the riverbank, I should most certainly have lived in one. But as things stood at this particular time, I had to content myself with daily walks along the riverside for a breath of fresh air and an amount of healthy exercise. So it was that I came to notice and be interested in the man who emerged each morning from one of the houses that so happily overlooked that placidly flowing river.
Sir, I beg your pardon.
How's that?
I don't mean to intrude, but...
Is there something I can do for you?
Yes, actually there is.
Well, that's your service, sir.
I walk along the river each morning at the same time, and each morning I see you come out of your house.
It is not my house.
No. Oh, I thought, well, I assumed that...
I am merely a servant in that house.
Oh, I didn't know.
The house belongs to a gentleman named Mr. Oswald Strange.
But I never see Mr. Strange. Of course, he may leave his house at other hours when I am not here to witness his departure.
Mr. Strange never leaves the house.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is he an invalid?
Not precisely.
Not precisely.
Let us say he is incapacitated.
Yes, I understand. Well, anyway, it was yourself who first interested me and has continued to pique my curiosity.
Oh, in what way, may I ask?
Well, each morning you come out of the house after a great jingling of bolts and door chains, which I cannot help but hear on those occasions when I happen to be directly in front of the house. You appear, you step forward and stand upon the doorstep. Forgive me if you feel I intrude upon your privacy.
No, I do not regard it as an intrusion. There's nothing to forgive. Pray, continue.
Thank you. I shall. Well, standing on the doorstep, I see you look around and sniff the air. And then you come forward. You cross the road, look down into the river. You do it, may I say, with the air of a man accomplishing a self-imposed task from which nothing is supposed to come.
Not entirely true. But go on.
Thank you. Then, having done this, you cross the road again. Turning on the threshold to take a final inhalation of air, you disappear once again into the house, bolting and chaining the door as if there were no possibility of its being reopened for at least a week. And yet, the very next day, you appear again, unbolt, unchain the door, sniff the air, cross the road, look into the river, and the identical performance repeated day after day after day. You cannot censure me for being curious.
Curious as to what?
As to why you do this each day.
I do it to check on my appearance. That's why I do it.
To check on your appearance. Is that what you said?
That is what I said, to check on my appearance. After all, as valet and companion to a gentleman such as Mr. Oswald Strange, I cannot permit myself to appear unkempt and slovenly.
No, but surely it can't be necessary to look at your reflection in the river. Surely there's a looking glass you could employ for the purpose?
There isn't a looking glass in all that house, sir.
No looking glass? Is that what you said?
It's some peculiar fancy of my master's. There isn't one in any single room in the house. Not one.
How very odd. Why should there be no looking glass in any of the rooms?
Sir, there is the mystery. It's just a fancy on the part of my master. His ways are queer ones. And this fancy about the mirror is one of them. In hiring a new servant, the very first stipulation he makes, has always made, is that about the looking glass. It has been one of my duties to explain the thing as far as it could be explained before any servant could be taken into the house.
But how could you know that there would never be one?
Ah, there's the rub, sir. I could never be absolutely positive, especially with the woman servants. What lies they would tell. They would protest that they didn't want to look into a mirror, and all the while the wench would have a looking glass of some kind or another hid away among her clothes upstairs. Sooner or later she would bring it out and leave it about somewhere, rather, where like as not the master might see it. I well remember one of them. An ugly one she was, marked with the smallpox, something terrible, and forever reading her prayer book at odd times. One day, I came into the kitchen, and there she was, at the table. Arabella?
Yes, Mr. Macy?
This is the day for polishing the silver, is it not?
Yes, Mr. Macy, I believe it is.
Then what are you doing here in the kitchen?
Doing a bit of studying.
Huh? And what are you studying, Arabella?
Why, the scriptures, of course.
And which part of the holy book commands your attention at this hour of the morning when you should be caring for the silverware?
Why, Ecclesiastes, Mr. Macy.
Oh, a great book. Full of the most meritorious advice. Don't you think so, my girl?
Oh, yes, sir. Most instructive.
Certainly you won't object if I read a verse or two over your shoulder.
Oh, Mr. Macy, I...
Aha! I thought as much. A mirror. Oh,
Mr. Macy, I...
A mirror concealed between the pages.
I needed to check the part in my hair.
Did you indeed, my girl? Did you think a neat part in your hair would improve your appearance?
Oh, Mr. Macy, please, sir, you wouldn't give me the sack, would you, sir? You wouldn't do that.
You fully understood the terms of employment when you took on the position.
Oh, yes, sir, but...
No mirrors. No mirrors of any kind, shape, or form.
Oh, yes, sir, but...
No buts. Go upstairs and pack. Be out of the house. Within the hour. I watched the poor girl leave, carrying her poor belongings in a battered portmanteau. It was all I could do to keep the tears from my eyes.
Yes, I can well imagine.
Of course, I had to tell Mr. Strange the reason for the girl's leaving. He'd taken a real liking to her. She was most efficient in her work, so I had to tell him her transgression.
And how did he react to that?
A look of infinite sadness came over his face. He sat for some length of time with his head in his hands, his shoulders bowed. I waited motionless until he could bring himself to speak. At last, he raised his head, rose, walked over to me. Why must I punish others for the sin which is my own, he said. That is what he said, sir. Then he walked out of the room.
Sin? What sin did he refer to?
That I cannot tell you, for he has never chosen to tell me.
You know, I have a wild desire to fathom the mystery of this man who cannot abide the presence of a mirror. Is there no way you can persuade him to confide in you?
Gentlemen such as Mr. Oswald Strange do not confide in their servants.
But there must be someone, somewhere, who knows, who at least can furnish a clue.
There is one. You might go to see Dr. Garden.
And who is Dr. Garden?
My master's very old friend. He's the only person who might know my master's secret.
And where do I find this Dr. Garden?
In that house right there. Next door to that of Mr. Strange.
Yes, but how do I approach him? What is the tactful way to go about it?
Well, if you like, sir, I will tell him that you propose to call upon him. Dr. Garden trusts me completely. You see, I was once in the service of Dr. Garden. And when Mr. Oswald Strange appeared on the verge of insanity, or even death, he requested me to move in with Mr. Strange and attempt to look after him. And that is what I have been doing ever since.
That's amazing.
Well, then shall I inform Dr. Garden that you will call at his house this afternoon? Say, at 4 o'clock.
I shall be there. I shall most certainly be there. I am very grateful to you, Dr. Garden, for permitting me to intrude upon you this way.
Oh, not at all. John Macy told me of your interest in the case of my poor friend.
How is his health, Doctor, as of now?
I'm afraid there is no amendment or any prospect of amendment.
I'm extremely sorry to hear that.
Old Macy has told you, I take it, some details of his peculiar condition, has he not?
He has told me something, and he says you may know all about it.
All about it? No, I'm afraid I don't know all. Perhaps I shall never know. Certainly not unless one day he elects to tell me. I only know what happens when he comes into the presence of a looking glass. But as to the circumstances which have led to his being haunted in the strangest fashion that I have ever heard of, I know no more of them than you do.
Haunted? You believe him to be haunted?
What else am I to call it? Haunted by the past or some memory of the past? If we could but locate that memory and bring it out into the light, well, perhaps we shall one day, if he lives to tell us.
Suppose you tell me how you came to know Oswald Strange, Dr. Garden. It's as well to begin at the beginning.
Yes. Our quixotic acquaintance started on board an Italian steamer, bound from Civitavecchia to Marseille.
If it is true that our ghosts are but memories of the past, then all of us are, in very truth, haunted, and will be to the end of our days. Still, it is comforting to think that not all our memories are hideous or malevolent or wretched. Certainly, some are tender and loving and merry. So, all our ghosts are not hideous or malevolent or wretched. Quite a few are loving and merry and tender. I'll be back with Act Two shortly.
And the Riddle's Wrap. It's the wrap that makes holiday shine. Riddle's Wrap. Wraps up work and saves you time.
For the holidays, 200-foot giant-size Reynolds Wrap is a lot of aluminum foil with a lot of uses. To protect food and leftovers in the refrigerator, to cover bowls, to heat up rolls, even for decorating. And because it's 200 feet, you won't run out of it in a hurry. Now with a 35-cent coupon on specially marked cartons. Limited time offer. Reynolds Wrap.
Laxatives work in different ways. That's why you should know about X-Lax pills. Overnight, X-Lax pills gently stimulate your system's own natural rhythm. Your own natural rhythm. And that makes all the difference. So try X-Lax pills for gentle overnight relief. X-Lax pills for occasional use only as directed.
Now you can soften hard, calloused skin without painful cutting or scraping. Apply stainless Dermasoft cream to your feet as directed. Insist on Dermasoft cream.
Oh, I thought that was going in a different direction.
So did I, right after the X-Lax, yeah.
It's one of the softened. What the? No details, please. Oh. That was a close call, kids. It was a close call.
It was. You know, that's the nice thing about the DVM copies of the Mystery Theater. We get different things, and some are local, but we seem to get different commercials from the Chicago broadcast than we do from others. So
it's
that's
a lot
cool.
of fun. It's a lot of fun, those old commercials. And
it takes me back to my youth.
Youth? When you were just a youth.
I used to youth. What's a
youth? What's a
youth? I'm sorry. Youth.
Yeah. What a wonderful job Fred Gwynne did in that. He didn't get to do a whole lot. He did a lot of Broadway, which is why he did a lot of mystery theaters, because, you know, he was it's right down by Broadway is where the mystery theater studios are. So,
and that, and with radio, you don't have people yelling, "Herman, Herman."
Yes. Yeah. And that last reunion movie that they did, he did not want to do the made-for-TV. They just threw so much money at him. His wife said, "Take it."
Yeah, take it and run.
Yeah. Yeah.
No kidding.
All the way to the bank.
Shut up and take the money. It always takes the wife to tell you, shut up and take the money.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, it does. You got your ears. Yours. You got it. You got us pegged.
Yeah.
There's no hiding with CW.
Yeah, and she always hates it when we go somewhere and you say, "You want your receipt?" She says, "Yeah, I need it for the boss." And I hand it to her. She goes, "I am not your boss." I said, "Well, that's debatable, but,
but
then all the people, you know, all the cashiers love it. They think it's fun."
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you going to do? But this cat that owns this house, this is weird. This is really strange.
Yep. And good old Norman Rose, the voice of God, you know, is what his friends had deemed him from the 50s on. Because he does. He just has such a strong, majestic voice. And he did it from radio days to now. I mean, you hear him in the mystery theaters and, I mean, in the mystery theaters and the X-1s. And matter of fact, he was the host of Dimension X in 1950. What was that? Might have been 1950 when Dimension X came out. He was the host for that.
The main voiceover guy?
Yeah, he was the main. Yeah, the main voice of the technically what I would call a host. Kind of narrated the story as it went along and, you know, did the opening. So he wasn't just the announcer. He was the host. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It was the T-minus and counting. 5, 4, 3, 2. Was that him?
No. That was X-1. That was the show that was a rebirth of the Dimension X. Dimension X came much earlier. It came about 3 years earlier on NBC Radio. NBC brought it back, but called it Dimension X. And but he was in several of those as well.
Cool.
But if you want to hear he did one of the Martian death marches, and he narrated the Veldt, which was the Ray Bradbury story on Dimension X. So, yeah.
Yeah, we got Ray Bradbury coming up too. So much good stuff and a whole lot of radio tonight. So let us continue with part two.
A whole lot of radio tonight.
Of House.
Yummy. Yep.
Yep. House Without Mirrors. We'll be back.
If you're paying more for your car insurance than you can handle, remember, comparison shopping pays off. Arco American has been doing just that for thousands of Chicagoland motorists. Arco American has the time and the knowledge to shop for you. Every day, qualified buyers receive fantastic savings. As a matter of fact, the February 1979 issue of Family Circle magazine points out dramatically in their feature article on deflating your car insurance costs that there may be as much as 30% or more difference in costs for identical auto insurance policies. You save if you shop. They repeat, Arco American has the time and the knowledge to shop for you. Do this. Call the S9-4677 first thing this morning for your free phone quotation. The savings could add up to hundreds of dollars for you. Here's that number again, S9-4677. Insurance plans are available with a low down payment and easy monthly installments. Shop and save money with Arco American. Call ES9-4677. That's ES9-4677.
A man accustomed to walk daily along a certain riverbank has become intrigued by another who emerges each day from a certain house at a certain hour to gaze into the flowing river. Upon being asked the reason, the man replies that it is to check upon his appearance, since the master of the house, whose servant he is, cannot abide mirrors. Wishing to pursue the origin of this idiosyncrasy, the questioner has been advised to call at the house next door, where lives a Dr. Garden, physician to the man who abhors mirrors.
It is appropriate that I interpolate here the fact that I aspired to become a writer, a weaver of tales, perhaps one day to earn my living by such endeavors. Anything which stirred my imagination was grist to my mill, and the tantalizing bits which I had gleaned from John Macy about the man who permitted no mirrors in his house excited me enormously. So it was that I found myself in Dr. Garden's study, sitting literally on the edge of my chair, waiting for the good doctor to get on with the story of Oswald Strange.
Forgive my poor manners. I neglected to ask you if you'd care for some tea.
Oh, thank you, no.
There's no trouble. I can ring for some.
No, I'm so eager to learn what I can about your friendship with Oswald Strange. Truthfully, tea would be a distraction.
Our friendship had a most inauspicious beginning, I assure you. The first morning on board the Italian steamer, after a rather uncomfortable night, I was shaving in my cabin. The door was open to improve the quality of the air. Well, sir, suddenly this stranger comes up behind me, glances for a moment into the small mirror before which I was standing, and without a word, tore it from the nail and dashed it to pieces at my feet.
Good Lord.
At first, his face was livid with passion. A passion of fear, it seemed to me, rather than anger. But it changed after a moment, and he seemed rather ashamed of what he had done. I myself was in a frightful rage.
Yes, no wonder.
I gave it to him in a style of language which I now regret, but which I hope was excusable at the time. Clumsy, lumbering ox. Do you know you've made me cut myself? What the devil do you think you're about?
I didn't mean to.
You didn't mean. You walk in here like a madman, come up behind me without a word, look without permission over my shoulder, and seize the mirror I'm using and smash it to bits. And you say you didn't mean to?
It's true.
It was as deliberate an act as I have ever witnessed. Don't tell me you didn't mean it.
But I didn't.
Impudent fool.
Please, sir, let me speak.
Pertinent idiot.
Sir, I tender you my most abject apologies. Believe me, I'm deeply sorry for what I did.
You've every right to be sorry.
It was pure accident, sir. Believe me.
Accident? You think I'll swallow that feeble explanation?
Well, perhaps not. Call it an uncontrollable impulse, if you will. A sort of seizure which comes over me.
Ah. Now, look here. I'm a doctor. Garden is my name.
Doctor Garden. I'm Oswald Strange.
What you said interests me. Perhaps on our voyage to Marseille we can spend some time together.
Well, I should be delighted. And take it as some indication that you've pardoned my outburst.
Oh, yes, I have. Now I'll just finish shaving my face without perforce the benefit of a looking glass. I did not altogether lose sight of Mr. Strange on board, or even after we had completed our sea journey to Marseille. I found him a pleasant companion, up to a certain point.
up to a point, you were saying, Doctor?
Well, there was always a reserve about him. He was uncommunicative about his past life. Most especially, he would never allude to his travels or his residence in Italy, which, however, I thought I could discern was a long one. He spoke Italian well and seemed familiar with the country, but disliked to talk about it.
So you continued your travels with Oswald Strange, did you?
Well, more or less, off and on. We would meet and then separate and then meet again. There were times when I, with a pretty large experience, was almost afraid to be with him.
Really afraid?
Yes, really afraid. His attacks were sudden and violent, and it was one most extraordinary feature connected with them all. Some horrible association of ideas took possession of him when he found himself before a certain object.
May I hazard a guess, Doctor? Was that certain object a mirror?
Yes, quite so. After we had traveled together for some time, I and I dreaded the sight of a mirror hanging harmlessly against a wall or standing on a dressing table.
It begins to sound as though you feared such a sight almost as much as he did.
Yes, you are right. I did. But one night, the worst things always happen at night, don't you think?
Oh, yes, it often seems so at any rate.
Well, Strange and I arrived at a small town in the central district of Auvergne, a place but little known, out of a line of railways. The weather had been rather against us. The day had been dull and murky, the heat stifling, and the sky had threatened mischief since morning. At sundown, these threats were fulfilled. The thunderstorm, which had been all day coming up, burst over the place where we were lodged. I have never been persuaded that sudden changes of weather, which have so much effect upon animals and even on inanimate objects, can fail to have some influence on a piece of machinery so sensitive and intricate as the human frame. Do you not agree with me?
I do indeed.
I firmly believe that it was at least in part due to the disturbed state of the atmosphere that on this particular evening I felt nervous and depressed. And when my new friend, Strange, and I parted for the night, I felt as little disposed to go to rest as ever I did in my life. The thunder was still lingering among the mountains, seeming sometimes nearer, sometimes further off, but it never ceased altogether. Oh, I was quite unable to shake off a succession of painful ideas. His image was almost continually before me. You can understand how, with all that had gone before, it would be.
Yes, I think I can.
Well, there was a door between our rooms, and the partition dividing them was not very thick. Yet, I heard no sound since I parted from him that he was there at all, much less that he was awake and stirring. I was in a mood, sir, a mood which made the silence terrible to me. I had foolish fancies that, he was lying there dead, or in a fit, or whatnot. And what with the thunder and all my fancies took possession of me. I could bear it no longer. I went to his door. After listening very intently, but quite in vain for any sound, I knocked pretty sharply. There was no answer. The suspense was becoming unendurable. Without further ceremony, I turned the handle of the door and went in. It was a great, bare room, so imperfectly lighted by a single candle that except when the lightning flashed, it was impossible to see into its great dark corners. But from the moment I entered that room, sir, the action of my senses and the faculties of my mind were held fast by the ghastly figure which sat motionless before a looking glass.
Oswald Strange? A looking glass?
Aye, sir. Oswald Strange sitting before a mirror. I cannot impress upon you how terrible it was. The weak light of the lone candle shone upon his face, lighting it from below. He was leaning forward, his hands upon the table where stood the mirror. He gazed into the glass with a terrible fixity. The sweat was on his face. His rigid features and his pale lips were horrible in that feeble light. He was completely stupefied and lost. Oswald. Oswald Strange, it is I, Dr. Garden. Don't you know me? Come away from the table. Come, my friend, come sit in the chair by the bed. Now, don't be frightened. I am here to take care of you. You know that, don't you? No, of course you do. Now sit down. There. No, you are overtired and you feel the weather. Don't you think you ought to be in bed? Now, suppose you lie down and let me try my skill in mixing you a composing draught. How will that be,
Better now.
Yes. Well, that's fine. Now, let me go to my room and fetch some medicines. I'll be right back.
No, don't go. In heaven's name, don't go. Don't leave me.
Well, all right. If you wish me to stay.
I do.
Then I shall. Now, tell me what I can do for you.
Fetch the mirror.
The mirror, you said?
That mirror. There, on the table.
Very well, if you insist.
I do. I do insist.
All right. Now, I have it. Now, what shall I do with it?
Hold it up to my face.
You're sure this is what you want?
Directly in front of my face.
Very well.
Now, look into it. Over my shoulder, look into the mirror.
All right.
What do you see? Tell me what you see.
See? Why, I see a very pale face with sunken cheeks.
What?
Sunken cheeks and two hollow eyes with large pupils.
You mean that you... You see it too?
See what?
That face. That face. That face. Which is not mine.
Oh, no, no.
The face I see always instead of my own.
My dear man, no. I see you. Only you. It was your face I described as I saw it, none other.
Look again. Look in the glass again. Tell me what you see. Whose face is there?
Why, yours, of course. Tell me, whose face do you see?
His. Only his. Always his. Always his. His. Always his!
And with that, he passed out.
Poor man.
Yes, you may well say so. But I knew what to do now. Here was something I could understand. I had with me my usual small stock of medicines, and I did what was necessary. He was very ill, at death's door for some days, and I could not leave him, though there was urgent need for me to be back in London. Now, when he began to mend, I sent to England for my servant, John Macy.
Ah, yes, whom I met.
I knew I could trust Macy to the utmost. Acquainting him with the outlines of the case, I left him in charge of my patient, with orders that he be brought to this country as soon as he was fit to travel.
Which clearly he did.
Yes, and with some success. Strange was able to lease the house next to mine.
Absolutely incredible.
It is nearly a year now since my poor friend took up residence next door to me. For some months now, he's been daily getting weaker and weaker. John Macy has been his constant companion. Oh, were it not for John, well, heaven knows.
And in all this time, neither you nor Macy has been able to ascertain what face Oswald Strange sees when he looks into a mirror.
Never.
Well, has neither of you asked him, pressed him for an explanation?
I see you know very little of the nature of hallucination.
Little or nothing, I must admit.
To the one who hallucinates, the hallucination is quite real. Nothing in this world, and no one, can persuade him that what he sees, or hears in some cases, is illusory. What he sees, really sees.
And what's to be done for the poor man?
Very little, I'm afraid, except to wait, to watch him, to make him as comfortable as possible. Keep him from getting too excited, ensure him what peace of mind we can, and hope against hope that the hallucination will disappear.
Yes, but will it, do you think?
I do not know. I cannot tell. It is beyond me.
Dr. Gordon! Doctor!
That sounds like Macy. Come in, Macy.
Dr. Gordon! You had best come to Mr. Strange. He needs you badly, sir.
Is he worse?
I think, sir, that he is dying.
Live with delusions. Why, there's hardly a woman alive who does not believe in her secret heart her appearance has changed only a little since she was 20 or 30. Many men share the identical delusion. But when delusion develops or degenerates into hallucination, then madness may threaten, perhaps even death. I'll be back shortly with our final act.
Children, we take them for granted. We shouldn't, for they are the future of the world. But not all children are happy. Some are refugees from a war they never made. Others are young people in trouble with the law. To them, too, the world is an alien place, something to defend against, whatever the cost. Still others are abused, or hungry, or just in need of some understanding. Because all these children represent our future, 1979 has been designated the International Year of the Child. Your American Red Cross joins organizations in 118 nations in urging you to do something this year in your community to help your children and children everywhere. To find out what we're doing and how you can help, contact your Red Cross chapter. Thank you.
Children.
It's June 1778, and we're at the desperate Battle of Monmouth. A legend is being born before my very eyes. A young woman volunteer, Molly Pitcher, is helping fire one of the American cannons. Can you talk to us, Molly?
Are you kidding? With half of the British Army coming at us? Fire!
Hard work for a woman.
Hot and hard? Try cooking in a colonial kitchen sometime. Man or woman, we've all got to help our country.
Today, thousands of women are volunteers who have joined National Guard and Reserve units. They are a vital part of our military manpower.
And woman power.
At only a fraction of the cost of equivalent active duty forces, over 300,000 employers have signed a statement of support encouraging employees to participate in Guard and Reserve training. Shouldn't you?
Hey, you employers out there. Don't you know that when you help a volunteer help our country, you're helping yourself? If you haven't signed a statement of support yet, you should be ashamed.
Got employer support, Arlington, Virginia, 22209. A public service on behalf of employer support of the Guard and Reserve and the Advertising Council.
And G.I. Jane. Oh.
Yeah.
Good story here.
Yeah. Who won the world? Girls. Who won the world? Girls. Women. That said Wonder Woman. This is brought to you by CW. And I approve this message.
And yes. I was waiting for that part.
Well.
Yeah, it's leading up to like what you said. Yeah, it's like what you said, CW, having people thinking that they haven't changed throughout time.
Indeedy. I mean, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the most fabulous of them all? Oh, well,
fabulous.
I can't lie. I mean,
fabulous. Well, with Erie House, you are certainly the fairest, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh,
that's
thank
not
you.
Even that's not even close.
Not even close.
Not even. Oh, thank you so much. What can I say to you guys when you speak the truth?
CWFPW for the win.
Yep, yep.
Woohoo!
Yep.
Thank you, Tom.
So I'm liking this story here.
I was just wondering, are there other stories where you have other things besides, you know, Snow White, the Mirror Mirror, the Wicked Witch who was enthralled with always asking the mirror who was the fairest of them all. Alice Through the Looking Glass is a mirror. I'm trying to think of what other things have the mirror thing going on.
We have a couple of mirror stories. As a matter of fact, one of them is one I did for a radio stage called The Mirror. Now, we have heard the version that the Shoestring Radio Theater did with my story, because they also did it. We have not heard my version of it yet, so.
And we're going
to hear that. It's in the lineup somewhere down the road.
We're going to.
Yeah.
Somewhere down the road.
Gonna make it, Dave.
So yeah, we'll have a weekend of mirrors sometime in the future here.
Oh yes, 13 years of bad luck, 7 years of bad luck.
Seven, I think.
I think it's seven, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh seven.
7 years of bad luck.
Did I mention? Yeah. Math is not my strong suit, but okay.
If I and if I am keep in about 27 more years, I'll be out of bad luck if I keep going. keep it break free for the next 27 years. I'll be out of bad luck.
Have you broken that many mirrors?
Well, not on purpose, but, you know.
Some horrible things.
I just don't have the grip I used to have.
I guess.
Hmm.
Get a grip, Dave.
Get a grip. Yeah. Well, you don't need mirror. Yeah. You have your smart device. Use that to reflect anything you want to see.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. You can pull back the camera on yourself, on your Smarter Than Me phone, and just straighten your hair that way, I guess. I don't know.
Yes, you can. I've had many a coworker fall in love with their image on their device while I'm doing all the work.
Oh, I can't even look at myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not something that I make a habit of. Like I said, shave once a day with a mirror, and the rest of the day I look like George Clooney because I stay away from mirrors.
All righty.
That's just the way it goes.
Well, I think we're going to have some time for bonus material. But first, I imagine we should complete our CBS Radio Mystery Theater presentation, House Without Mirrors. Here's the exciting conclusion.
Dr. Garden has been relating to his visitor the story of his erratic friendship with Oswald Strange, the man who cannot endure mirrors. As the curtain fell on our second act, John Macy, entrusted by the doctor with the day-to-day care of his peculiar patient, has suddenly appeared and urged the doctor to come immediately to the bedside of Oswald Strange, who, says Macy, may be dying.
The face of John Macy was ashen pale. A tremor seemed to pass through his frail body. His hands trembled and his voice shook. At this shocking announcement, Dr. Garden sprang to his feet. He, too, was clearly perturbed in the extreme.
What's that? What did you say about Mr. Strange?
I think, Doctor, he may be dying. You'll best come at once.
Of course, immediately.
Dr. Garden.
Yes. What am I to do with you?
Would it be possible for me to come with you?
Why, yes, I suppose that would be all right. Come.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. I've never seen Oswald Strange in the flesh.
He's not a pretty sight at the moment.
Yes, we'll cut across the lawn. It'll be quicker.
Of course, he may be only sleeping, Dr. Garden, but I fear there may be no awakening.
Where is he lying?
On the chaise, in the small room on the first floor. I left the door unlocked. Permit me. Straight ahead, Doctor. You know the room.
Yes, I know it well.
If he still sleeps, we'd best keep our voices down.
That's quite right. Speak softly.
There he is, Dr. Garden.
Yes. Well, he's not dead, Macy.
Thank heaven for that.
He's opening his eyes.
Oswald, it is Dr. Garden. I'm here with you, and so is John Macy.
And who is that other?
Do you wish him to leave? He knows something of your sufferings and is interested. But he will go away if that's what you want.
Let him stay.
Very well. Is there anything you want? Anything we can get you?
Yes. I want a mirror.
A mirror? Are you quite sure you want a mirror?
I'm sure.
Or do you think it wise? You're in a weakened state.
I'm dying. Will you not grant me my final request?
Macy, fetch a mirror for Mr. Strange.
Yes, but there's no mirror in the house, sir.
Well, then fetch one from my house.
Yes, sir.
Macy has gone to get you a mirror.
Ah, good. Prop me up, will you? I speak with difficulty, and I have something to say.
We are listening.
I loved my wife dearly. Her name was Lucy. She was English. But after we were married, we lived a long time in Italy. She liked the country, and I liked whatever she liked. She liked to sketch, too. Had ambitions to be a painter one day. So I got her a teacher. He was an Italian. I shall not give his name. We called him the Master. Yes, the Master. Little did I know.
Oh, no, you're growing short of breath, perhaps.
Do not interrupt, please. I must finish.
Very well.
My wife, my Lucy, had a maid. Had it not been for her, I might never have found out what I did find out.
And what was that?
I'll tell you. Then I can rest. One day, I sent for this maid of my wife's.
You wished to speak to me, Mr. Strange?
Oh, yes. Is the Master in the house at the moment, do you know?
Oh, yes, sir. He's in his room.
Would you ask him to come down here for a short while? Tell him I'd like to discuss my wife's progress.
Oh, he's sure to know all about that.
Huh? How's that? What did you say?
Nothing, sir. I'm not sure he would wish to be disturbed at the moment, sir.
And why not?
He's writing a letter.
Is there any reason why he cannot break off writing a letter to speak with his employer? Is it a letter of such vast importance?
It's a letter to your wife, Mr. Strange.
A letter to my wife? But he sees my wife each day. Why would he be writing her a letter?
It's a love letter, sir.
A love letter? Is that what you said?
That is what I said.
You're a vile, insidious woman.
No, sir.
A scandalmonger, a troublemaker.
What I know, Mr. Strange. And I know more than I have told.
You have told enough. Get out of this room. And out of my employ.
I know what I know.
How can you possibly know the things you claim to know?
Because, Mr. Strange, I was once a victim of the Master's wiles. In another house than this, under similar circumstances, he seduced my mistress, then he seduced me. A treacherous, insidious man he is, Mr. Strange. Under cover of his artistic profession, he takes advantage of every opportunity to conquer and degrade whatever woman comes under his spell. And his spell is very powerful. Take my word for it.
Is it possible that you yourself are still under his powerful spell? That it is the fury of a frustrated girl that prompts you to slander my wife?
It's true. I did love him once.
I can't believe it. My Lucy.
Go upstairs now, Mr. Strange, to the Master's room. There you will find the villain writing to your wife.
A frenzy took possession of me as I listened to those words. I am naturally vindictive, you must know that. You must remember that. And now my longing for revenge was like a thirst. A thirst.
You should rest, Oswald.
No, no, no. I must go on to the end.
If you must.
When the woman repeated those words, he is writing to your wife. I laid hold of my pistols as by an instinct. I managed to get to his room unobserved. When I entered, I saw him immediately. He sat at the only table in the room, writing at a traveling desk by the light of a single candle. It was a rude table at which he sat, and before him, exactly before him, there was a looking glass.
Oh, a looking glass.
I stole up behind him as he sat and wrote by the light of the candle. I looked over his shoulder at the letter and I read, "Oh, Heavenly Father," I read, "Dearest Lucy, my love, my darling," I pulled the trigger of the pistol I held in my right hand and I killed him.
My poor friend.
But before he died, he looked up once, just once, not at me, oh no, not at me directly, but at my image before him in the mirror.
Oh, my friend.
His face, such a face, full of horror and shock. His face has appeared in every mirror ever since that moment. And mine, my face, is gone.
Strange. Oswald.
He's
not dead. Simply exhausted.
But he's so still.
Hand me my bag. I'll give him a stimulant.
Yes, Doctor. Here it is.
Hey, Dr. Gordon, I brought the mirror.
Here, I'll take it.
Now, we'll just wait and be quiet till the stimulant takes effect.
Yes, sir. Lucy.
She's coming round.
Amore. Amore. La mia esposa. Amore. Lucy. Lucy.
His wife.
My will. Provision for Lucy. In my will.
Look, Doctor. He's opening his eyes.
Huh? That man. That man. What does he hold in his hand?
It's the mirror you requested, Mr. Strange.
I want it. Hold it in front of my face.
Is this wise, Oswald? Is it good, do you think, to revive this misery of your lifetime when it's so near its close? Have you not punished yourself enough without this?
You must let me have my way in this. For if now, when I look, I see you right once more, I shall take it as a sign.
Hold the mirror before his face, then.
As I held the mirror up to the dying man, as he looked intently into it, the three of us who stood by his bedside saw a look of purest rapture spread over his face, and his frail body relaxed. It left no doubt that the face which had haunted him for so long had, in his last hour, disappeared. And the face he saw in the mirror was his own.
And that is the story of an hallucination. That an hallucination is self-induced makes no difference whatsoever. As is the case with all psychosomatic ailments, the pain is very real to the sufferer. For the sufferer, it truly exists. To the sufferer, as in the case of Oswald Strange, it can bring death. I'll be back shortly.
When you see her, you walk on by, you don't know him, you won't even try.
That's Stella Reese, singing about how people with epilepsy are sometimes misunderstood. Do you know that epilepsy can happen to anyone, at any age, for many causes? Epilepsy can begin from a bad case of measles. I'm Gerald June. I know. At 9 years old, I contracted measles and encephalitis. Now I have epilepsy, but it doesn't stop me from writing music. My kind of epilepsy couldn't have been prevented then. It can now.
When you see her, you walk on by. You don't know him. You won't even try. They don't want you to hold their hands. They just need you to understand.
To learn about causes and prevention, contact your local chapter of the Epilepsy Foundation of America or write Epilepsy, Washington, D.C., 20036.
In just 15 years, Polk Brothers has seen the microwave oven go from almost a novelty to a virtual necessity in Chicagoland homes. With moms so busy, instant cooking is a must. Our famous brand name microwave manufacturers, Amana, General Electric, Hotpoint, Litton, Magic Chef, Panasonic, Quasar, Caloric, Tap, and Whirlpool, have created countertop models, gas and electric combinations, with fantastic automatic controls which keep tabs on everything from the cooking to the time and date. And nowhere in the world but Polk Brothers can you see and compare side by side as many models of microwave ovens. Polk priced as low as $179, less a Polk trade-in. And with any microwave you buy at Polk Brothers, you get a rare gift, your free copy of Wally Phillips' new book, The Wally Phillips People Book. It's the $7.95 hardcover edition, a Polk Brothers gift to you with most major purchases, only one to a family though. Buy where the builders and apartment owners buy. Polk Brothers, nightly till 10, Sundays till 6.
You always find early week specials for early week shoppers at Walgreens, and here are just three of the Walgreens sale features through tomorrow Wednesday. 4-ounce jar of Paquin's hand cream is on sale for just 99 cents. Now's the time to save on the cold weather face protector mask. Regular $2.95 value, Walgreens sale price just $1.99. And Budweiser beer is on sale. 6 12-ounce cans for only $1.59. Shop all the early week specials at your nearby Walgreens today. And here's a thought. This Christmas, one of the nicest gestures you can make is to send a truly heartfelt greeting with an American Greetings Christmas card.
Here's a gesture.
An American Greetings card is the friendly way to wish everyone on your Christmas list all the happiness and joy of the season. Right now, you'll find a wide and varied display at your nearby Walgreens. American Greetings cards with messages of every kind and all price ranges. Stop in your nearby Walgreens today and choose your American Greetings Christmas cards.
Our drama, House Without Mirrors, was adapted from a short story written by Charles Collins in the year 1866 and originally titled The Compensation House. We've altered a few words, even as we have altered the title, but the plot and essence remain the same as they were more than a century ago. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Norman Rose, Robert Dryden, and Bryna Rayburn. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I know, Gunner. I know all about you. When I look up a man, I make sure there's nothing left to know. I wondered why you dropped out of the automobile business.
Then you know I have no time for anything but to make a living while I continue my search.
I do. That's just why I figure my wife is safe with you.
Until I met Eve, he would have been right. Now I wasn't sure. I had a cold feeling between my shoulder blades, remembering Jimmy's prophecy. That old Aborigine pearl diver knew things no other man did. If he smelled death, it was coming. I could almost taste the stale odor of it in my nostrils.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
News. We're CBS, News Radio 78, WBBM, Chicago.
In just 15 years, Polk Brothers...
And we are Erie House Radio. How about that?
Bling-gong. Wait. Oh, never mind. Okay, here it is.
Whoa.
There you go.
Nice.
So say it again, Dale. Say Erie House, we're Erie House Radio again, Dale.
You're listening to Erie House Radio.
There you go.
Hello, I have no idea why I'm doing this. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Okay. Do you have this one? That's cool. That's cool.
You
got one?
You first.
With apology cigar. Contrary to popular belief, there are worse things than looking in the mirror. Things like pickled pig's feet, for example. There you go. That's all I had.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie. The spirits are about to speak.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
One's enough. I'm just there in case of an emergency.
If you can't follow that one, we're in trouble.
We are in deep doo-doo. Doggy doo. We're really in deep doggy doo. We lost CW, but hopefully she'll be back shortly. Thanks, Blog Talk.
Oh, we lost her. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we lost her.
There she is.
There we go. Hey,
she's back. There she is.
Back.
Oh, lady.
There she
hey,
is.
Lady. Well,
hello, hey, Blog Talk Lady. Blog Talk Lady does not like me.
Well, yeah, Blog Talk is tough on us sometimes. That's for sure.
I'm afraid so, but you'll never be rid of me. Never.
Good. Oh, wait a minute. That sounds kind of creepy.
It does.
Which is why you're welcome.
Sounds
here.
Like. Say, oh,
thank you.
Like my ex, no, you know, come on, stop scaring me.
Yeah. No, we indulge in the creepy. Creepy is good.
But yes. Yeah, yet we do have some time to play.
We do. I got a little something here for us. Wait a second here.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Reach into my pocket here and
floating on shroud number 9, for I only
sink my teeth into you. Maybe millions of zombies go by, but their heads disappear from you. 'Cause I just want a neck.
Sorry, that's very sentimental. That kind of gets me.
Oh,
yeah, right in the neck.
Brings a tear. Yeah, right in the neck.
That's romance right there. I'm sorry. That's the real stuff.
We can't have romance on Erie House Radio.
Sure can.
What is this?
Oh, yeah.
We just did.
This is not Heartbeat Theater. This is not Heartbeat Theater here.
It's not Teen Beat Magazine either, but hey, you know. I'm an old softy, I guess.
Yeah, that was one of very interesting, one of but a few experiments in the hi-fi that Spike Jonze does.
Yeah, nice Paul Frees right there.
Yep, yep.
They did quite a few of those with him.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people did. You know, Homer Jethro did a number with them, and what's our favorite? Mel Blanc did a song with him, and quite a few people did work with Spike in his renditions, as well as his own.
I'll bet you Boxcar Willie never did.
No, he didn't. That's Slim Whitsky.
How about Slim? Oh, yeah. Great minds or warped minds think alike.
Yes, we do.
Actually, I can't. Whenever I think of Boxcar Willie, I think of Slim Whitman, because the only time I ever heard of him, even though he was such a big hit over in England, the only time I ever heard of him was when he did those TV record sales things.
Yeah, the infomercial record thingies.
Yeah,
that was about it.
And the same with Boxcar Willie, big hit, but I'd never heard of him.
Yeah,
until
me neither.
Until that TV commercial where they're selling his records.
Damn it, we're going to make him famous.
Or else.
Because that commercial came on like every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, because the station, if they sold it and had that code in, the station would get a cut of that sale. So.
Ah.
That's where Amazon.com got that idea. So that's
yep.
Where
probably.
Yeah, I wouldn't
yeah if you go
like,
to every blogger or Stevens, something.
It's just like all the stuff that Ray Stevens did. The most money he ever made was when he put together a collection of videos and sold them on television, and that's where he really built himself. Now he's monetized on YouTube with his own stuff. It's really cool, and he makes. He makes money off of every hit that he gets, so that's cool.
Good for him. Like
nice
to see
one.
The artists do well.
So purchase Slim Whitman and enter Erie House, and Erie House will get less than nothing for that?
Pretty much.
Right, yeah.
Pretty much. That's okay.
We get some copyright lawyer trying to chase us, but that's okay.
Yeah.
He's not very good.
No, we're too slick for him.
Yeah.
We have a protective layer of poverty. We're lawsuit proof. What are you gonna get?
That's
my
right.
Bills?
They say anything, we have to say, get in line, buddy. Get in line.
What are you going to win, my bills?
It's not exactly. It's not just abject poverty. Let's categorize this as this.
Yeah, I should have specified the abject aspect of it.
No, really, I don't abject at all.
Oh, jeez.
I object. I object, Your Honor. I object, Your Honor.
Yep.
You certainly are.
I certainly am.
Ah, that's such a comforting sound.
I couldn't find a goat for a while tonight. My cat got up on the desk and helped clear my desk for me.
So the cat got your goat, huh?
The cat got my goat, yep.
Yeah.
So he's back in good voice.
Oh, how I love that goat.
Oh, yeah.
I find him very calming. Hey, okay,
so,
finally, let's...
What is happening next week on Erie House Radio, Dale?
Nothing.
Oh, yes, please.
We're gonna loop the screaming goats and play it for an hour and a half straight.
Woo!
Woo-hoo.
All right, night off. Cool.
All
no,
right.
Or
soothe your nerve.
Or what we could do instead, I don't know. That was my idea. Now here's Dave's idea. How about we have a tribute to Lizzie Borden? We're going to return to Lizzie Borden. And,
it is the 120th anniversary. It is 120th anniversary next week of Lizzie Borden's murders.
Yay.
Oh, yes. Perhaps. Exactly. Oh, and if everyone asks very nicely, I'll regale you with the little nursery rhyme ditty in my most dulcet tones, or lack thereof.
All right.
Oh, please do. Please do. We would like that very much.
And then,
yeah,
and
we
then
got what? Agnes
Sunday,
Moorhead
what
on
happens, Dale?
Well, no, we got Agnes Moorhead on Suspense for Lizzie Borden.
Yeah.
Plus another axe murder story and a crime classics. Now we can get to Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
It's happy birthday, Stan Freberg. Born August 7th of 1929. Too bad he's not still with us, but we're going to have really more suspense? This
yeah,
is going to be a special two-hour show.
Because, that's the suspense Stan was in.
Okay, Alibi.
The suspense. Yep.
Yep,
wow.
Plus, well, I'm sure... I'm sure we could slip in other Stan Freberg stuff for bonus features.
Well, we could, but we've got like three whole shows there. One is his audition for the sitcom that he did before he got his variety show.
Mm.
It's called That's Rich, with how the audition program for that. And a study in satire from the CBS Radio Workshop led by Stan is leading this. And in it, you will hear something he was never allowed to release on the record. Capitol Ooh. Records would not let him. He recorded it, but Capitol Records would never let him release it. So he aired it on CBS, on the CBS Radio Workshop.
And that adds up to a whole lot of radio. So that'll be a special two-hour show next Saturday instead of our normal hour and a half, which is winding down. There'll be some form, shape, or something of Gar the Ghoul over on the Twitches in just 60 seconds or less. So thanks for stopping by, particularly Fogsbane and Bob for logging in and chatting with us a bit here. Thank you so much for stopping by. We will see you next weekend with Lizzie Borden and Stan Freberg. And I want to thank my partners, Gar the Ghoul, who's prepping for his show, CW, and of course, Dave V. Binkley. See you next week.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Did you get an article?
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can you dig it?
Ha 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 Yeah, close the door, will you? There you go.
That's right. There's a draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, watch it. There may be one soon.
There's a draft, but only if you're in Russia. Yeah.
I was going to say, there may be one here.
I think we'd be eligible for – I think we'd be eligible draft age in Russia, Dale. I think you're getting down to that now.
Oh, jeez. I think they got the grannies throwing the bottles of vodka. Molotov cocktails.
What? And waste – no, she'd say what? And waste good alcohol? Forget you.
Yeah, what? They see good alcohol? Are you crazy? Capitalist pig.
No. I will keep – listen, you capitalist. I keep my vodka here. Take husband. Get out.
Take husband. We keep vodka. That's awesome.
How you think I get through 45 years of marriage?
Yeah, right. Especially in this country.
Yeah, so – I'm of the opinion for this nation, everyone, I don't know. I mean, if you started the draft here, pretty much you are going to have to pull. Well, yeah, unless they want everyone to play a round of World of Warcraft on there because everyone's still living in their parents' basements, sucking on a quart of Mountain Dew, you know.
Why am I
in
laughing?
Their pajamas.
This isn't even funny.
No.
Truth hurts. The truth hurts.
Yeah. Oh. Truth hurts, man. Hey, Mom, I can't go into the service. My team needs me on Halo. We're right in the middle of something right here.
Yeah. Oh,
Mom,
my God.
I'm on Grand Theft. I'm on level 27 of Grand Theft Auto. I'm doing something really important here, okay? Give me that.
Are you sure you're not a parent?
Give me another Mountain Dew.
Are you sure you're not a parent?
I'm sure that'll stop them, yeah.
Are you sure you're not a parent? That sounds like the voice of experience.
Actually, that may be the voice of someone who hung out in the basement. We used to do a lot of gaming.
Oh, that's
not in my parents' basement, but the people I used to hang out with in their parents' basement.
Oh, God.
Ah.
Funny,
that's
people at
yeah,
work
Yeah, that's
ask
the empty
if,
pizza boxes.
Yeah. People at work will ask, are you working from home? You know. And I'm like, yeah, I'm working from my basement. At least it's my basement, not my parents'.
Yeah.
They always get a laugh out of that. Because most folks can't tell how old I am on the phone.
We know better.
It's because I'm immature.
Yeah.
Hey, did you have to agree so fast? Yeah. Yeah, you
yes,
are.
Yes,
you
yes.
Son of a...
I'm of the opinion just, you know, instead of going to the draft office, just send a drone. Just send, you know, here, I got this on Amazon.com. You know, I got a load of batteries. It's all charged. Just send that over, and it'll do the job for me. Don't worry. I can still do it by remote. I'll be there. Just my drone's going to do the job for me.
Yeah, okay.
I don't see why we can't.
Well, if you get a
send a
or if you get a clone, then you don't have to send a drone, you know?
Some
oh,
recently
yeah.
divorced people, they're so full of hate, you're going to win. they're just so full of hate. How can you lose?
Yeah, no kidding. Tell them, since you lost the settlement...
Yeah.
Tell you what, we'll send you over there, and if you do well, we'll get your lawyer, you, a baseball bat, in a room, go for it.
Yeah.
Meow.
Yeah.
would be kind of cool.
I suppose I could do it.
I believe in giving like people in prison an opportunity to redeem themselves through service in wartime. Because if you go and serve, you know what I mean? I think you could be forgiven many types of crimes if you would serve your country.
Okay, so what
that's where I feel bad, because you have people who are in prisons who are out fighting these forest fires and these wildfires. And not only do they not really get credit for that, but that doesn't help them get jobs with the fire department when they're all out. It just it doesn't seem, you know, here you are, they're doing something to really help people.
Yeah.
And to maybe save lives and homes and things like that. And yet they're allowed to apply for
that's not cool because
now been trained to do.
I think there should be some redemption there. I mean, if you're, for me, like, I don't know. It's easy to say you're sorry for something, but if you actually atone for something, I think you're showing that you're truly sorry, and you want to fix things. You know.
It would depend on the crime, first of all.
Well, naturally, yes. But
yeah.
I think a lot of crimes are forgivable if you serve the country.
Yeah, I don't know. Did they do that in World War II? Or World War
I?
Yeah, The Dirty Dozen. It's a movie. Because we know movies really happen.
Who did that? I mean, what there were a lot of times, especially in the 50s, you kind of had your choice. Well, either you're going to jail or you're going in the military.
Yeah. That I went to basic training with somebody who had that option.
Okay. So.
And he took the military.
This is something that they obviously had committed a crime, basically saying either go to jail or go serve your country.
Now, here's an interesting out. What happens if you say, okay, I'll serve my country? You go through the physical, and they say,
There's got to be a job they can give them in support of the service, maybe not frontline combatant or something like that. But there's got to be something they can do.
They can cook or do paperwork.
Or push a broom or things like that.
Yep.
Just don't let them near the payroll.
Yeah.
Especially that embezzlement charge that's hanging over their head.
That's right.
Yeah, the only flaw with that plan is you might get a criminal who's now in the service making things worse.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So
A 50 million dollar jet just does not vanish. Or does it?
I think I saw that on a TV special. It vanished.
Was that Copperfield?
Into thin air, yeah. He even made the Statue of Liberty vanish.
Yes, he did.
Kind of pricked the French off a little. Took one extra 15 minutes to surrender.
Ouch. Ouch. Ouch.
Sorry.
Oh, I like it.
Excuse us.
I'm a bad man.
I'm a bad influence. I think that's what happened here. Dave is not normally this naughty.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes,
that we know
of. Not normally.
Well,
not as a rule.
Not on the air. Not on the air anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you'd notice.
Well, I am definitely waiting for
the next show, Lizzie Borden, I am sharpening up my axe to not only do an homage to Lizzie, but also to cut into the cake of Mr. Stan Freeberg to celebrate his happy birthday.
Ah.
Yes.
Well, that was probably the of all time, and a nice tie-in for the two shows. As it's probably time for us to start wrapping it up and see if we can drag the schnozzle over to the mic.
Hey, Mr. Durante, the stage is yours, sir.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Somebody get that girl
off the stage. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
Aribo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Ink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-
where am I?
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.
Nighty-night.